Welcome to the Feminine Podcast, the official podcast of Feminine, talking about everything in between, a little bit of femme, a little bit of EM. This is Risa E. Lewis, podcasting live with my co-podcaster.
Hello, it's Doug Lynch from the Jelly Bean Podcast off Life in the Fast Lane.
Doug and I are podcasting from SMAC, Sydney. This is episode number 3, and we have a very, very special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity, Risa and Doug. My name is Evan Ibizi. I'm a 34-year-old emergency physician.
What? You're 34? Who knew? Such accomplishment by the age of 34. Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, I was born in Rwanda, raised in Belgium and the United States. I'm an emergency physician, but previously trained and specialized in internal medicine in Switzerland.
So how does that work there? Is it internal medicine and then you do a fellowship or...?
In Switzerland, emergency medicine doesn't exist as a specialty in itself. It counts as a subspecialty, but it has a form of flexibility. So we through the internal medicine curriculum, I added a lot of acute medicine. I knew even when I was doing my medical school in Belgium that I wanted to be an emergency physician. So I had all things planned out. And I completed that with 1 year of trauma fellowship in Jerusalem in Israel, so I could get the surgical part of it. And I did over 3 years as a junior attending in a university hospital.
Well, Switzerland, are they developing emergency medicine as a specialty? Do you know?
They are. They have an equivalent of a state certification. They work as and train... just like any other emergency doctor throughout Europe, but for mostly society and political reasons, they haven't gotten all of the international recognition yet, so it's a little bit tricky.
And that's the way, you know, in the United States, you first did emergency medicine, and then you did a fellowship, like a 1 year or 2 year fellowship in emergency medicine. So this is a very common pattern for the development of the specialty in a country. What about here?
So in Australia, we have one of the oldest colleges of emergency medicine, the Australasian College of Emergency Medicine. It's been going for 35 years. And it essentially has, it's more like a parallel process with the classic Royal Colleges. So a lot of the colleges out here are spin-offs or based on more of the UK system. So the Royal College of Surgeons in the UK, there's a Royal Australian College of Surgeons, and then so the similarity with the physicians and the general practitioners. So if you want to do emergency here, you literally get out of college, so it's a 6 or 7 year program here, the significant amount of clinical at the end of it in most systems, and then you do an intern year and a couple of years of residency, so they're called HMO, Hospital Medic Officer, for a couple of years, and then you choose your specialty, and emergency is one of those. So you can go into that like you might go into surgery.
Okay.
Right, so it's well established. There's a really conspicuous pathway, and finally, after a prolonged period of time, now they're actually creating a significant number of FASMs, and there's quite a bit of competition for work that hasn't been. So when I say FASM, I mean a fellow of the Australasian College of Emergency Medicine.
Ah.
So it's quite a simple path now.
Yeah. So Eva, we invited you on the show to chat about a few things, a few interesting things that we think we know will be of interest to the audience. So your relationship with Feminem, where did it begin? When did you start dating?
to answer that question, I will have to go back to how I first discovered podcasts.
Okay.
The first time I heard about Feminem was through a podcast that Derek Cast, one of the founders, had made at SMAC. It was a little over 2 years ago. I'm a late adapter, depending on the geographic zone, it was one of my first podcasts that I had listened to. I had actually heard first about Foam, and Foam Ed when I was in Israel, because we had an Australian doctor who was also a SIM educator, and she literally opened up a world of apps and blogs and, you know, a different way of learning medicine, which is very developed in the Anglo world, but not so much into the Western Europe and French way of learning. So as I was starting to pick up on a few podcasts, Life in the Fast Lane, MCRIT, and eventually Smack, I listened to Dara talk, and I didn't really know. I knew that I was looking for something, but I couldn't really know exactly what I was looking for, and I remember hearing about this network of female physicians who had organized around issues and found commonality, and also to do better together, and also to feel a need that for me was very essential, which was having female models and mentorship, as I was at a point in my career where I had done, you know, I'd done what I thought was everything I could do and beyond, and I needed a little bit of direction and also to just expand my circle and horizon and also
your raft. Were you looking to expand your raft?
This is a buzzword. I was looking for a raft.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking for a raft, to also understand that, you know, just simply the tools that actually get you where you are are not necessarily the ones that were actually helping me stay there. Basically, you know, the medical school also in Belgium was very competitive, lots of, you know, work hard, sometimes play hard, but it was really, you develop a lot of resilience and kind of like survival tools in the jungle, and you have to do this and this and this. But necessarily, at some point, once you have actually mastered all of that, you need something else, but you don't really know what you need. So yeah. Somehow, part of me had to go look for it outside of my known environment, and that's also thanks to, I guess, me as a person and also the environment, the very multicultural environment that I was raised in, across countries, across cultures, across way of learning, teaching, doing things. So
yeah. was it on this podcast? So Dara was speaking, and was the Fix 17 coming up?
Yeah, it was coming up. So I was like, I have to go. I don't know what it is, but I have to go see it.
You're like, I'm going. What are you going to? I don't know, but I'm going.
I had no idea. I didn't tell my bosses. I literally just like took it on the vacation, and I was mind blown. I was really thrown into the future. Here being here in Australia it's a next level, because I'm literally 10 hours ahead.
Right.
Mm. So, you know, it's, yeah, for me it was really being in the future, seeing things that were possible, and also just the all of the benefit that you get, the insight, everything that changes for you and for those who come after you. When you understand like the power of networking, and also it really got me out of like a perceived sense of isolation.
Yeah, and this is, so walk me through it. So, you know, you got exposed to podcasts and social media and the power, and you then specifically heard an episode, Dara Cass Feminem. You heard about Fix 17. You said, I'm going. You attended Fix 17, and then what happened between the year of 17 and 18? Because correct me if I'm wrong, you were on the stage of Fix 18.
A lot happened. I think my life changed. I don't want to sound dramatic, but it's close to that.
No, we're all up for drama.
Bring it on.
I had been, by then, I had been gestating an idea of creating that circle, that network, the net, the raft, where I was. And so I literally went with, this is going to be an experiment project, and I'm going to study everything that I can out of these people, and I'm going to learn as much as I can of who they are, because although they're in a different environment, this is, you know, they know something, and that we need. So we since then created a group called MedFem, which is the medical feminist.
Nice.
That actually took a lot of strength and oxygen and inspiration also, and encouragement from Feminium as a big sister. So that was in a way a lot of intertwined, growth, because it's a little thing with a life of its own now. Also at Fix 18, I was able to go and launch it to also, it was my first time as a public speaker. It was a lot of...
That was the first time.
It was my first time. Like, everything I had to learn, from public speaking to standing on stage to being seen to being heard
to wearing a fabulous outfit.
Yeah, and to also to develop skills that I had not learned in med school.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is not just hustling and bustling. It was really taking also basically your role not just as a physician caring for your patients, but also reflecting of you how much you contribute to the society, to your responsibility as a collective, and what you can do to make better, and to just simply find constructive ways to do better with the situation that we have and through that commonalities.
So the last episode, Doug and I were talking about NOEM last evening, and sort of as an example of a collaboration, like same issues, similar language, different environment, but it speaks to a common group. And it sounds like Feminem sort of spoke to you, and you're like, similar needs, similar challenges, let me bring it back to Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us more about the organization?
Yes, sure. We are about 10 founding members, men and women. Oh, I would say women and men. I say that because we had a lot of discussion. We had about a year of discussion of what we wanted it to look like, and we really wanted it to be inclusive. And men are the minority in medicine. They've been for about at least in Switzerland over. At least in med school, over 20 years now.
May I ask a question?
Yeah.
Probably the same question you're about to ask. So when you say they're minority, is that in terms of intake into medical school?
Yeah, in terms of the medical population.
Yeah.
Medical school residency, you can see that, men are the minority. So
great.
We wanted to include them.
That's good. But I have a second question, which is probably your second question.
Doug, I mean, we've been co-piloting
beautifully.
No. I mean, it's like we're going to start finishing each other's sentence.
Well, it will get weird.
Yeah. How did you want your coffee?
Yesterday. The leadership roles. Now, we talk about now there being a majority of women in the Swiss healthcare system in general. Are they well represented in leadership roles? Because there are many other places around. So, I mean, Sweden's another great example and so on, where there are more women than men in the system, but they are not just yet dominating the leadership roles, which of course they should be if they are 70% of the workforce, right? But that's not what's happening. So that was my question.
Yeah. In medical schools, women are about 60%, 60-65%. The numbers vary, but it's always the same trend. However, I can say that the numbers that just came out from the Swiss Medical Society called FMH from 2018, which is very recent numbers from March, really show that female doctors are really underrepresented in key leadership positions. And although in the residency level, they may be, of course, for hospital settings where people train, about 52.8%, when that number really rarifies, into top leadership, that goes into 12%, and then C-suite is 8.8%.
Wow.
So it's basically what this says is that this is not just Switzerland. This is those are numbers that the trend is international.
Yeah.
It may not even just be into healthcare. But I do feel my feeling, maybe because I'm an impatient EM doctor, I feel like we're late.
Hmm.
We're so late. How come this is not fixed? This is not more and better? And not only there is, you know, the Iron Dome, if I would say.
Is that like a glass ceiling?
It's just a bit stronger.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, it sounds even more impenetrable.
In French, instead of saying plafond de verre, which is glass ceiling, they say plafond de fer, which is iron ceiling.
Yeah.
And on top, but with that, what we realize, and this is what MedFam really wants to focus on, because the majority of us have about 10 to 15 years experience, between 5 to 15 years experience, it's really to see also why is there such a sticky floor.
Mm.
I love this, a sticky floor. In other words, it's hard to rise.
Yeah. So I love because that. So basically we wanted to educate ourselves, to understand the problem, to name it, to, you know, make a diagnosis. So we had to read, we're still reading, we're still learning. And also from that to be able to let's say by doing this process, which took about a year and we're still in it, we realized that there are some things that are accessible. There are some things that may not be visible. And actually a lot of work, and I'm really talking about French-speaking Switzerland, a lot of work has already been done at the faculty level for academics, researchers, female, you know, they have tailored workshops and scholarships and work flexibilities to allow women to who wants to stay into research to do that. But the thing is, you know, to actually get to that level, you usually, you know, you're not entry level.
Right.
You're already, quote unquote, they help you, but you're already rich.
Right.
But then you have mentorship and whatnot. So our idea would really to bring, first of all, awareness, and to teach ourselves, the men, the women, the young doctors, the one who's still struggling with trying to find a balance, to give them more tools that are not just the ones that they will teach you in med schools, but to maybe give you like a clinical mentorship to help you, you know, we want to organize events so that people can actually know what their rights are, if this is okay, if this is not okay, to not feel so much alone, to get connected, because there's a lot of power, empowerment in that.
Mm-hmm.
And to have the conversation and to also talk about, you know, to talk about those gender equalities.
I want to ask you a question. It's going back a little bit. When you refer to 8% and C-suite,
mm-hmm.
What's C-suite?
Chairs?
Yeah. Us, when we say C-suite, for us also means like hospital level, like CEO, the
CEO
chief executive.
Okay. So there's leaders chef, and these are the top leaders.
So it's not just the chef de département, but it's even of the hospital.
Yeah, chef de service, yeah, and all that. So it's still, those are, of course, you have variation across departments. And some numbers, like at the faculty level, not so much the clinical, but the numbers maybe will plateau at around 18% of female. But, you know, still, it's still like the pyramid is still not, you know, it's still very disbalanced. And on top of that, you also lose, you know, all of the lost to count.
Hmm.
These capable women, you lose them all. Although because Europe has mostly a state-funded medical schools, taxes, like a lot of money is put into trying to raise a doctor, to make that career. So it's not like in the U.S. where you have a $500 million bill on you.
Right.
But it's the state that takes that on. And anyway, if you're going to have 65, 70% of women who are going to be your main workforce, there are some things that need to be addressed, that needs to be changed. We need to find new paradigm to make sure that they stay there. And it's not just maternity leave. Mm-hmm. Maternity leave is, of course, usually where, you know, you hit a roadblock somehow. Yeah. Whether before, after, this and that, but
no, you're right.
You know,
like, it's not the only topic.
Yeah, agreed. And this came up last night as well. Didn't it? I mean, it's you know, breastfeeding and maternity leave and all these sort of issues, as if they're the only issues that are important. What is it that you want to see happen on the hospital floor? Actually, you know, the people that are working day to day. I mean, I can listen to the UN and their charter, and that would be great. But I think that we have to attack this from both sides, thinking global and acting local.
MedFem has a few goals, and the first challenge that we find is to bring awareness into the medical culture if we wanted to change. The majority of the work right now that we have is to really raise consciousness, because although Switzerland is a beautiful country, it does have a very conservative mindset in the male and female. So my hope is that when people hear about the medical feminists, that they're not just thrown away by the word feminist, because we believe that for us, a feminist doctor is any person who feels committed, you know, to take the challenge that are associated with the feminization of the profession. And that is regardless of, you know, their background in terms of gender, in terms of race, in terms of sexual orientation, or wherever they're from. We want to grow. For that, we need sponsors.
Did you say so, any sponsors?
This is a shout out. This is a shout out for whoever will listen to us.
MedFem sponsors.
Yes. Sponsors, big opportunity.
And if you want to help us make it possible, because at the end of the day, we really want to. MedFem was created because there was a need. It didn't exist. We don't have that many women's sections in medical societies the way you can see in the UK, in the rest of the Western world. And we're still trying to learn how to spread our voice, to craft it, we will make mistakes, of course, but we want to really spread the awareness. The other two things we want to do is to empower the doctors, and especially the female doctors, to know what's available, to have access to it, the same way that one day, you know, I discovered foam, and then I discovered podcast, and then my life just got, you know, exponentially bigger. I also want people to know that there are things that exist, and even in terms of just knowing your rights, having access to it, knowing how to respect them. This I think also can also correct, auto-correct a lot of things, and also to develop a sense of collective responsibility, and to really just shift the cursor from an individual problem, an American problem, an Australian solution, to really something more international, more inclusive, and to just help us look at the system and invent new ways so that the people who give so much to their patients can also do the same for themselves and for their career, and then I guess the whole society benefits from that.
Audience, we will put lots in the show notes about how to read more, learn more about MedFem, how to contact Eva. Doug, final thoughts.
Oh, look, it's absolutely awesome. If people aren't familiar with Switzerland, Switzerland's a very interesting country. There's three different major language groups, and there seems to be quite different culture from each one to the other one, but they are uniformly conservative. So even though it's possibly one of the most developed nations in the world, conservative, big and small C, is a big factor. So trying to bring about change in a place like that would be a lot harder than trying to bring a change in other places. So I really applaud you for giving this a go.
Yes.
I do understand that you come from this fantastic country and facilities are very good and this is all brilliant, but making change like that would potentially be harder there than it would in, say, in Australia. So I think it's not to be underestimated what you've achieved so far.
Eva, some final thought?
I think outside of the idealistic vision, so we have just conducted a short survey, a humble survey, but mostly through social media, and we got over 1,071 response. The survey was across the general medical population, and just a few numbers from there, we'll know that about, of course, 70% of women answer, 30% of men, which is kind of representative of the population, and in there, when we asked them about their needs, 58% of them did say that they really had a need to really promote equity.
Right.
And so that brings, it also validates the work that we're doing. About 39% of them declare having seen or experienced inequity in terms of career training, progression, evolution. So that is, you know, this is a real issue. It's not just it's not just a fashion. It's not just a Me Too problem. But time is up, as we've seen, and time's up. Healthcare is real. It's taking on and big institutions are really taking actions. We also want our decision makers to be responsible, to take action, and this is why we want to have those numbers. We're still analyzing them, but we want to go back to them and be like, look, this is what it is. And then we want to also present them to the general population. And for that, but for that, of course, we want to just stay independent.
Yeah.
And so we will remain a small strategic force and hopefully contribute to changing the culture and bringing something more to the table.
A small strategic force, but with a lot of friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we look forward to watching, reading, helping, supporting, and rafting with you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much, you both, for inviting me.
And thank you to everybody in the Big Smack Exhibition Hall for making all the noise and playing all the music in the background.